Well, hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Glad to have you with us today on this Monday, October 31st. You all know what that means. It's Halloween, and there's a lot of tricking going on at the station today. I've already been surprised, I think, two or three times. It's starting to get old, but the day is a long ways to go. But thank you for tuning in as you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. It's going to be a warm one today. It started out kind of overcast, but they say it's going to all burn off and it's going to be very nice for the rest of the day. So if you have anything outside planned, I would do it. You know, sooner or later, we're going to get, our luck's going to run out. And it's going to be cold and blustery and all of that. So get it all in while you can, you know, and have a good time tonight. But have a sane Halloween, as they say. Watch out for the little kids in costumes, especially after it gets dark. We always want to remind people of that. We're going to have fun on the program today. We have some interesting shows to talk about. Our friends at the Barn Players are doing their new musical, Nice Work, If You Can Get It. As Phil said during the promo that we had, you know, that for him, that would be someone who works in a wine factory. We'll see what it says in the course of the show today. With us to tell us all about it, the actor who plays Jimmy Winter in Nice Work If You Can Get It, Brian Larios is with us. He formerly was with the Leawood Stage Company in My Fair Lady. He sings with the Heartland Men's Chorus and is a member of their board. He's an attorney by education and a former disc jockey. So he doesn't even need me in here. He could run this board by himself. At KOFO in Ottawa, Kansas, I was with KBTN in Neosho, Missouri. We all learned the hard way, I suppose.
Well, Michael, thanks for having me here. And as I'm looking around, it's changed a little bit. It's, of course, all technology today, but same concept.
Yeah. You know, when I first... Well, in Neosho for sure. And when I first started with KKFI here, we had the cart machines, the dreaded cart machines that wouldn't re-queue or people wouldn't let them re-queue, and things would start and stop unexpectedly.
Yeah, it's a lot of surprises when you're doing live radio and you're behind the board and having to run it and you don't have a producer, so that makes a big difference.
Oh, we are. The host, the producer, the director, often the writer, everything.
Right.
And then that's the way it is at small town radio
stations.
That's
right.
Well, that experience probably serves you well as you do theater over the years. You're an attorney by education.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I will fondly remember when I was in high school taking those series of tests to determine what you're suited for in life, and it said I should be an actor, a priest, or an attorney. And so I didn't pursue the priesthood, but I've dabbled in acting and got my law license, and so some of those came true. So.
What kind of law do you practice?
I'm actually an administrator for a law firm here in town, Lathrop & Gage, so I help others practice by supporting our work in the law firm, but I have a little easier schedule because I don't have those billable hours looming over my head.
That's true, so you don't have to show up at 5
o'clock. It gives me time to act.
That's right. That makes it a little easier, I suppose, but that being one of the prestigious firms in town, of course.
Yes, it's a great firm, long history, one of the oldest firms west of the Mississippi. So it's a great firm to work for.
And I'm sure they encourage you to do public service work. Most of the firms do.
They really do. I mean, you know, we Missouri Bar as well, you know, we're very much about supporting community service work and doing work for indigents. And so it's really very important.
Yeah, well, one of the things you do is participate in the theater scene with the Barn Players, and you're in the show Nice Work If You Can Get It, the new musical that's about to open at the Barn. It's going to open this Friday, November 4th. Yes, this is the last day of October. It's really hard to believe, isn't it? For essentially 3 weekends, plus a Monday performance. I'll go over that later. At the Barn Players' current home at 6219 Martway in Mission, Kansas. If you like to MapQuest things, the zip code you need to feed in is 66202, or online, of course, at thebarnplayers.org. More information on that at first, but let's talk about Nice Work If You Can Get It. Not a show know I see often around the area.
Yeah, you know, it's really not that old of a show, although the music itself, the show is comprised of George and Ira Gershwin music, so the music itself is quite old. But the show itself really started being workbooked in about 2007. Originally, Harry Connick Jr. was to be the male lead that was eventually taken on by Matthew Broderick, but it didn't premiere on Broadway until, I think, 2011. It was nominated in the 2012 Tony. So it, in terms of shows, it's not that old of a show. So it's one of the great things about community theater in Kansas City is we get to see some fairly current shows that make it out here. You know, you're lucky enough to secure the rights to do these shows, and this is one of them. So.
Yeah. Well, which would you rather do? Do you want to talk a little bit about the theme of the story, or would you like to hit all those songs that should be very familiar to people?
Well, let's talk a little bit about the story. I'm going to be 100% honest, because when I first read the script, I was like, oh, this is cute, and it's, you know, it's kind of silly. Once we started running through it and we began putting the book with the music, it is hilarious. There are just some extremely funny things here. Set in the 1920s, Prohibition and bootlegging is very much about this show. It's a sort of a plot twist here where it's the traditional girl and boy want to fall in love, but there's obstacles in the way, and in this case it happens to be hooch or bootleg whiskey. And the hilarity that ensues as they try to come together as a couple is just hilarious. Some great actors in this that people in Kansas City will have seen. And I'd be remiss if I didn't point out that Reed Youth, who people see around here a lot, plays Cookie McGee, and he's phenomenal. My co-star, Krista Eiler, who plays Billy Bendix, the role that was played by Kelly O'Hara on Broadway, is phenomenal. This woman has pipes on her, and she can sing. You just can't imagine. So you're gonna see a great cast working in this show.
Yeah, been hard at work on the music.
Yeah, you know, because this show is so heavy with dance, when we started rehearsing, we spent an entire week doing nothing but dance. And our two choreographers, Valerie Martin and Ramsey Self, have done a phenomenal job of putting together the dances here. And if you're a fan of tap and of traditional Broadway dance, you're going to love this show, because these dancers are working so hard. And I'm not a dancer, and they even got me moving, and it's almost believable. So, but we worked an entire solid week on dance, and then started working on the music and really marrying those two together. And it makes for a very entertaining evening.
I'll bet so. Now, you admitted you weren't really experienced at dance, but obviously you are at singing.
Yeah, I've been singing for, my whole entire life. I did a lot of theater in high school and in college, and then when I was here in Maine, we were talking about My Fair Lady, really was on about a 30-year hiatus of doing any theater, and friends really talked me into getting into it, and so I've just jumped right in, and I've been very fortunate since last October when I first was in the chorus at the Barn to then have two leads in shows, and it's just been it's a blast. It's a lot of work, but it's so much fun when you pull it off.
It really is, yeah. And it's difficult too, especially when you're doing things that you don't feel super experienced at and all of that. But, you know, if you have some good choreographers working
and directors,
they can help
does
them
a
out.
Great job directing. You know, and I'm so glad you mentioned that, because, you know, you always say people don't want to see how sausage is made. And theater's kind of like that. I mean, particularly in those early weeks, there's a lot of, you know, putting your hand to your forehead going, oh, my goodness. But to see and to be a part of the collaboration with the cast and the chorus as you begin, and it really makes an enormous difference once you get off the script, when you don't have to look at your script and you begin to explore the characters, and the magic just starts happening, because you begin to organically feel, oh, he or she should do this, and you begin playing off each other, and it is a lot of hard work, but the end result is just amazing when it comes together.
Yeah, it's set during, I'm going to guess, the Roaring Twenties.
It is. You would think, and I'm sure in my script somewhere it gives me an exact year, but it is definitely in the middle of Prohibition, if not towards the end of Prohibition. So, you know, liquor is taboo, and as we all know, it was taboo, but everybody had it, and that's the case in this story. Hilarious farce where the lead female character, Billy Bendix, is a bootlegger, and she is trying to hide 400 cases of gin, and she happens upon my character, a wealthy playboy named Jimmy Winter, who happens to have this enormous beach house in Long Island, and somehow the liquor ends up there, and the comedy ensues. It is quite funny.
Yeah, shows have had fun with that, especially the Roaring Twenties aspect of being so wide open.
And that really has impacted the dance, because you know it is such a lively time, and the gin joints at the time were so hopping, and I think both Valerie and Ramsey have done a great job bringing that energy to the stage. And in fact, the show opens with us being in a gin joint, and it's just alive with energy in that opening number with some just spectacular tapping. I mean, it's quite amazing as a person who is not a dancer to be in the middle of it and have them doing this around you. And of course, when we first started, I'm in the wings watching them rehearse, and then to be in the middle of it and feel that energy, it's so exciting.
Yeah,
so exciting.
Flapper style.
Yeah, there's, you know, you're going to see some Charleston, you're going to see some traditional Broadway tap, and so if you're not really familiar with sort of the Broadway musical concept, of course there's the lead actors, they get all the acclaim, and then you've got your chorus or your ensemble, and these people work their hearts out. They're called to almost every rehearsal, and if you've got a show like this where you're dancing and you're singing in the chorus, they just bring so much energy to that tap, and then they have to sing on top of it, and they sound wonderful. Kevin Bogan, our musical director, has done just a fantastic job getting the sounds to harmonize, and then to put that on top of incredibly physically intense dance is something, and they just really pull it off. It's amazing.
Yeah, and of course you play to how big of a orchestra this time?
It's funny. I was making some notes about how big the chorus and the other cast was, and I'm trying to remember, but I'm going to say there's probably, forgive me, orchestra, I'm going to say 12, 13 people, what a sound. We are very heavy on horns, which is very stylistic of that music of the 20s, and it's just the sound you get from all that brass. And then, of course, I think we've got three keyboard players some reed players that are amazing. It's a great sound, and it just fills that theater.
We're talking with Brian Larios. He plays the role of Jimmy Winter in the Barn Players production of Nice Work, If You Can Get It, a musical comedy set in the Roaring Twenties, as it were. We're talking about the music and the dancing. Let's talk about the songs. There's a number of songs in this show that will probably be very familiar to the audience.
Yeah, the audience is going to have an aha moment. No matter what their age, they're either going to have heard these songs performed by, you know, the American song singers, they're going to have heard them in a movie, or they're going to have heard them in a commercial, but it's just a catalog of some great Gershwin music. Things like Nice Work, If You Can Get It, Someone to Watch Over Me, you've got Will You Remember Me, Let's Call the Whole Thing Off.
Yes,
everyone knows that piece. It's Wonderful, which of course has been in a number of movies, but was we all remember Gene Kelly doing that and dancing to it. But just song after song from the American Songbook, the Gershwin catalog, which people will know and they'll be tempted to hum along with, although we know they won't. but it's hard not to. They'll definitely be tapping their toes because the music is so good. And you know what's interesting? This music, really, because this is collaboration music between Ira and George. So most of this was written before 1930, certainly in the mid to late 20s. George Gershwin died pretty young. I think he was 39 years old in 1936, 1937. So it's amazing the amount of music that he gave to America at such an early age, and one wonders, you know, what would have happened had he been able to live longer. Ira didn't die until, I think, very early 80s, 83 or something. He was 87 years old. But what he did give us in that short period of time was some spectacular music that the great American song singers have done over the years, and it's everyone's going to know it.
Yeah, one of the fun things of seeing a musical at the barn is, where are they going to put the orchestra this time?
Yeah. You know, it's amazing. Of course, when we rehearse with them, although this week we're in our tech week, so for those of you who don't know, we're polishing. We're running light cues, and we're working with the orchestra, and tonight's going to be scary because we changed costumes for the first time. But the orchestra for this show is in the far, far back of the theater, and God love these people because it gets a little warm back there, and they're sardined in, but the sound, it really does carry out, so it'll...
Yeah, sometimes they've been hidden on the side and all of that. This is, they probably like this better because they're out there, they can be seen.
Yeah, you know, it's, well, no, for this show, we're rehearsing it out front, but they're actually in the back for this one. But you're right, and it's just amazing how they find creative ways to tuck them in and still get the wonderful sound that we get. The barn, I find it fascinating because if you've gone to the barn to see a lot of shows, they do some huge shows in this little space, and yet from an audience perspective, you don't really sense that it's on this tiny stage because they just are so creative about how they stage it. But I mean, this is a big show. This is a cast of 20 some people, including the chorus. So it's a lot of people, but you feel it works. They just make it work, and the Kip's done a great job of staging it in such a way that you don't feel crowded, and it really fills the stage. You're going to get a real Broadway experience.
And musicals often seem bigger anyway.
Absolutely.
they really do. I mean, you can have a small stage, but with the dancing, especially the tap dancing, I want to ask you about that. Yeah. But you just fill up the stage, it just seems bigger. Everything seems bigger.
Yeah, and there's challenges with that because it is a smaller venue, so you try to make a larger sort of set, and you know the crew is back there doing a great job of changing scenery and flipping things, so you have different rooms. It's a lot of work, but they make it happen, and from the audience standpoint, it's the magic just happens. It just appears. You know how they do it, I don't know, but it's magic.
Oh yeah, and whenever you see a musical where there's tapping, there might be lulls in some parts of the show. I'm not saying there will be on this. Probably not. But there are lulls sometimes. But boy, if somebody comes out there with a good tap number, and what comes to mind, I wish I could remember the exact name of the show, but the other barn in town, the Bell Road Barn, did a show a number of years ago. It was set on a cruise ship. The whole cast comes out at one point and forms a long line, and they tapped. The audience came alive for the tap number.
I think you're talking about Anything Goes, but it's, you know, the tapping is such a wonder. You have to be a curmudgeon in a really bad mood not to perk up when you see people tapping. And it's just such a talent and such a skill. And I will say we have some very talented tappers. And, of course, the people that are really good, they're featured. And it's just mesmerizing to watch them because it's one thing to be able to do that and then to put it to music and then to synchronize it with other people. It's such a gift. And they will entertain. And, oh, my gosh, I'm trying to think. There's probably 3 or 4 major tap numbers. Yeah. And one of them you get, you know, right at the beginning of the show. And there's a lot of traditional sort of jazz dance as well. So there's something there for everyone. And then there's people like me who get to do some movement. I'm sort of I took my hat off every night to the choreographers just after I apologized for butchering their work. But they got me there. You know, they just have patience and they get you there. And that takes the talent to be able to convey that as well.
Oh, the sound of those taps, especially against the wood, isn't that
I know. And when it's in unison, when it clicks, it's just it's like a symphony. It's really, really impressive to
it's
watch.
It's like a symphony, and it's exciting. People in the audience seem to come alive during those
tag
numbers. Oh,
yeah, absolutely.
And I wonder why that kind of faded over the years. It's exciting to see.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think really you have to look at, what was it, like probably the late 60s, early 70s, as music itself kind of changed. We didn't see those big production numbers in movies anymore. It's really just been the last 10 or 15 years we're starting to see musicals make it back into theaters, into the movie theater. So
sure,
people
yeah.
didn't get exposed to it. But I think seeing it now and having it come back, audiences are excited, and we're seeing new generations of people want to dance. We have a lot of young dancers in this ensemble, folks that are in studying dance, and so they really bring some talent.
Nice work if you can get it. Opens this Friday, November 4th at 7:30. Performances will continue on Saturday the 5th, also at 7:30. A matinee on Sunday the 6th at 2. Now the second weekend, the 11th Friday, the 12th Saturday, both at 7:30. Another matinee on Sunday the 13th at 2 o'clock. A special Monday night performance. Usually that's called Industry Night, on the 14th at 7:30 p.m. Then a final weekend on Friday the 18th, Saturday the 19th, Friday and Saturday, closing with a Sunday afternoon matinee on the 20th at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Barn Players in Mission, Kansas. The address, 6219 Mart Way, Mission, Kansas. There is a number to call. They don't answer it all the time. It's a community theater. No one can be there always. But leave a message if there's something pertinent. Not to get tickets, of course. If there's a special situation, if you're bringing a handicapped person or you yourself have a handicap, you might want to let them know ahead of time if they can help accommodate you by calling this number, 913-432-9100. And, of course, all this information, a lot of it anyway, can be found on the Internet at thebarnplayers.org. Show opens this Friday, November the 5th. This is there'll be one more show after the Nice Work If You Can Get It, the 6x10 Playwrights Festival in December. Then in January, a whole new season opens, and it will be the final season in this particular location.
Correct. I'm not yet sure where the barn will be relocating, but very excited for a new opportunity. So, you know, this is your chance to come support this last facility here.
Yeah.
And the next season will be there. But, it'll be interesting to see what the future
things
holds.
Things go on. The theater groups, especially the Barn Players, have a history of being vagabonds.
Oh, yeah. You know, absolutely. And you find a home, and the great thing about it, the barn has a very loyal base of people that come, and so those people are very receptive to moving with you when they've enjoyed years and years of quality entertainment. And the barn does; they just put on some amazing shows. And again, this is my second one, and I've been thrilled to be a part of the organization. But I've seen, over the years, I've seen so many shows there, and I'm rarely disappointed. They're just so good. They're just so good.
You mentioned the stage at the barn. How, yeah. Even though it was in a smaller facility, it still seemed bigger.
Yeah.
I guess that was my phrase. But you, when you were with in My Fair Lady at Leawood, you performed in a very big place.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, that was unique. That was one of those where just getting from the end of the stage to where you were supposed to be, you almost had to sprint and you were out of breath. But the intimacy. You know, it's to the benefit, I think, of the audience because of the intimacy of that theater. You are so close to the actors, and you really kind of get a chance to feel the emotions and to feel like you're a part of what's going on stage, and yet still feel like you're looking at something that's magical and not sort of about you. So it's like I said, I give them enormous kudos for how they put on these huge shows in this intimate facility.
Yeah, of course. You're the tap dancing fan out there. You want to get up close so you're right by where that tapping is happening. You can see how fast those feet have to move.
Oh, and it's God love these dancers because they'll be doing jazz in one number and tap in the next, so they're back there, shoes are flying because they've got to change from tap shoes to jazz shoes, and they pull it off. They pull it off. It's quite entertaining.
It's an exciting show to watch. Happening beginning this Friday, November the 4th, with essentially 3 weekends of shows. The website once again, and I suppose if you're making your plans, you might want to check out the website first, because all the dates are down there.
Yes.
And if they have sold out a particular date, it might well tell you on the website, and that is thebarnplayers.org. Click through to buy tickets, for instance, and check that out if you're interested in that. You could, it's a musical, so I hesitate to say you could show up at the box office day of show. That might be difficult for a musical.
Yeah, the musicals tend to be incredibly popular, and you do run a risk, particularly at the end of a run, because as you know, once word gets out, and I suspect, you know, humbly acknowledging this is a pretty good show, I think the word is going to get out, and you're better off to, if you would like to go, to make a reservation. You can make a reservation on the website and then show up, but it's definitely best to do that.
Yeah, it's probably a better idea.
Absolutely.
Yeah. If you show up to the door, you kind of, you're taking your chances there, because musicals often sell out a little faster than more conventional plays.
That's true. And also, when you have a cast of 20-some people, you've got family and friends.
Oh, that's
so
true.
You have a lot of people.
The relatives of all the cast will come to the show.
Exactly. And I will say, we have some great, you know, I mentioned some of them, some other great actors that people will have seen on stage in Kansas City. Pam Haskin, who plays my mother, fabulous actress. She's in the show. And a fellow attorney, Chip Buckner, is also in the show. And people see him all over Kansas City. So there'll be faces they recognize.
Yeah, sounds like an exciting evening will be in store for you. If you choose to see Nice Work, if you can get it, it opens this Friday. Hot. You're into Tech Week, and
we're
refining, and you're getting ready to go. So for you, the hardest part is the dancing, I guess.
It is. The lines have been memorized. Those are, you know, I always have these recurring dreams that I'm going to forget my lines. Unfortunately, that hasn't happened, but the lines are memorized. It's just getting those dances down.
Yeah. Do you have that dream? I've had that dream.
I've
been on the air and had no idea what I was talking
about.
All
the time. Even before I was even doing community theater, I can't find my script, and I panic, but fortunately, that's not the case.
Yeah, and somehow in those dreams, even though you have no idea what you're talking about, everyone around you seems to know what they're doing, and
so
you
calm.
Fit right in.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know what that is called. There's probably a psychological term for that, but somehow you do no wrong.
Yeah.
No matter what the situation, it's an old actor's dream. Maybe someday I'll get some actors on to discuss that.
Yeah.
Ought to be a lot of fun. I want to thank my guests for being with us. Brian Larios is with us. He plays the role of Jimmy Winter in the Barn Players production of Nice Work, If You Can Get It. Brian, an attorney by trade, a former disc jockey. That endears him to us right away. He's also with the Heartland Men's Chorus. Do they have anything coming up?
Yes, our holiday extravaganza will be coming up the first weekend of December, and this year something different. We're doing one performance out at the Johnson County Theater, which I can't think of the name of it.
The bigger one room or the smaller
room? The bigger one.
Okay.
So that'll be
Yardley Hall?
Yes, we're doing that the 10th of December, so yeah.
Well, good luck on that
Thank
as well.
You.
That's a big room to fill.
Yeah.
I wonder if you could fill it if you moved this musical over there.
That would be fun to try.
Well, wait, the board of the barn? Think about that. The barn originally was at, well, not originally, the barn formerly, years ago, was at Johnson County Community College. Anyway, I'm getting off track. Thank you so much for being with us, Brian Larios, who plays the role of Jimmy Winter in the Barn Players production of Nice Work, If You Can Get It. The barn is located at 6219 Martway in Mission, Kansas. On the web at thebarnplayers.org. Thanks so much for being with us. We're going to take a short break. When we return, we're going to talk about the opera. Always exciting. Big voices in those shows, too. When we return, you're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI. 90.1 FM. Welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. We're going to transition from a 1920s slapper-style musical to The Marriage of Figaro, which is going on at the Lyric Opera of Kansas City. Performances will open this Saturday, November 5th at 7:30 p.m. Performances then continue on Wednesday the 9th at 7:30 p.m., Friday the 11th of November, also at 7:30 p.m., and then a big matinee on Sunday the 13th at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. It's a big room, but probably not the biggest that some of our guests have sung at. And we might talk about that in a little bit. Arthur Woodley is with us. He plays the role of Dr. Bartolo. Okay. Hold your breath now. I'm going to see how many of these I can read without taking a breath. The San Francisco Opera, the Opera Seattle, Philadelphia, St. Louis, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, St. Louis, San Francisco Symphony, the National Symphony, Baltimore, Santa Cecilia in Rome, and he has a distinguished history of playing Porgy in Porgy and Bess. So welcome. This is your second time with the Lyric here in Kansas City?
It is the second time I've been here. Yes, yeah. It's been great.
So sometimes people say that the Kauffman is the biggest room they've sung in. That's probably not true for you.
No, it's not. It's a great size room, but I remember once when I was in, it was in Italy, actually, and it wasn't a room, it was actually outside in the, what they would, I guess they call it the piazza, and there were 40,000 people there.
Well, that is bigger. That would be like singing at Royal Stadium.
That's right.
Yeah, a big room like that. Yeah. April Martin is with us once again. She is a newly appointed resident artist with the opera. Last time you kind of sort of explained that. I don't know if they'll ask you to do that again. We might. We might ask you to.
Sure.
I'd love to do that with you. She plays the role of Barbarina, and she was trained with the UMKC Conservatory of Music and performed at the Bar Harbor Music Festival.
Yes, I sing Zerlina and Don Giovanni, one of Mozart's other gems this summer.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, yeah.
Should I go into it? A resident artist does what with the opera?
A resident artist is a singer who is still training. It's like residency for doctors. You go through all the schooling, and then you join a company, and you sing small roles. So I just sang Du Fairy and Hansel and Gretel in September, and singing Barbarina, a supporting role is what you'd call it. But I also am at most of the rehearsals watching the main character. Maureen McKay plays Susanna in our production, and so I'm following along with my score and taking frivolous notes to make sure that I understand what she's doing on stage and how she phrases certain things, maybe what intentions are behind certain actions she takes on stage, because Susanna really never leaves the stage. Although my part is small and supporting of Barbarina, a resident artist gets to sit in rehearsals and observe the bigger roles and study them, get a good idea. I'm singing in Juliet Letters in January, which is just the four of us, resident artists, soprano, mezzo, tenor, and bass. And then we're in Dead Man Walking and Pirates of Penzance. So we're in the operas and watching the big-time professionals perform and gleaning whatever we can from them.
Yeah, do you learn from the way they conduct themselves,
we
the way they train their voice? I assume, Arthur, that you probably do vocal exercises daily.
Well, just about. My teacher always says I should do them daily, but I cheat a little bit. It's every other day, especially if I don't have to perform. It's something like every other day or something of that sort.
Yeah.
So, I give it a rest every once in a while.
That's why the schedule is structured the way it is.
That's correct.
You open, for instance, on Saturday the 5th. You don't have another performance till Wednesday the 9th, so they give you several days in between. That's a good thing to do?
I think it is. Because what happens, you open. Let's say you do the opening and you think about it and you say, well, you know, I need to do this. I should do this. Oh, I didn't do this. And it gives you a chance to reflect about what you did and how you did. And then you get another opportunity after a couple of days of rest and thought about your performance and the performance as a whole. And then you come back and you're fresh and ready to go again.
And what does the prestigious UMKC Conservatory say about this?
Yeah, we definitely, often our operas were double cast, so I would perform on one night, and the other person singing my role would perform the next night, and then I'd perform again. So that's how most conservatories, colleges do it as singers are growing. In the real world, though, usually you have a night off between performances for operas.
Mm-hmm. Do they have stand-ins as such?
Yeah, they're either called covers or understudies, maybe in more of the musical theater world. The goal is to have the person who's been rehearsing it the whole time do it. So that's by having you sing all night, and then you go home and you try to relax and you go to sleep, and then you wake up the next day and you just kind of take it easy. And then the following day you wake up and you get geared up, you warm up, you do whatever exercises you do, you get to the theater and put on your wigs and your makeup and your costumes, and maybe you think through some things that, like you were saying, that could have gone a little differently or you want to try a little differently.
Yeah. Well, you know, look at it from the audience's point of view. They may have come just particularly to see, you know, Arthur Woodley tonight.
So they should definitely come to see Arthur Woodley. He's phenomenal.
No. They would be disappointed not to see you.
Right.
Well, the good thing, I guess, about being around for a little while is that people do remember you and if you've done well or whatever, and they're there to support you, and that's fantastic.
Oh, sure.
That's great. Whether they're family or friends or people you haven't even met as yet, it's still a wonderful thing.
Yeah, this is you're singing The Marriage of Figaro. It was made, I suppose I first became aware of that even as a child when some of the cartoons did imitations of the opera within the cartoon and played the actual music. And for those
Bugs Bunny. I remember looking at the Bugs Bunny things and laughing and ha ha ha, and who knew
those
years later.
Those cartoons, if you pay close attention to them, a lot of people don't, classical music is in the background.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And
a lot of people don't realize that.
The Lone Ranger. I mean, when that theme would come on, you know, I didn't realize until years later that it was Rossini who wrote that, you know.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, classical music always
in the back.
And some
commercials, too.
That's right.
The chocolate company from San Francisco, Ghirardelli, maybe?
Ghirardelli.
Is that Fulari or is that the...
Yeah, one of them uses, you're right,
yes,
you're right.
From Marriage of Figaro, the Act 3 Susanna Countess duet where they're scheming and writing this letter to the Count to trick him, that's in a commercial that happens all the time.
That's true.
And then Shawshank Redemption, they play.
Oh, that actually made me cry.
The record, he puts on the record.
Yeah, and everyone stops.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic.
A psychologist told me that classical music is used to relax unruly children.
I can believe it.
Pets, and people in generally that are, you know, uptight and upset. Listening to classical music often does soothe them down.
Yeah, soothe the savage beast.
That's right. It really does. Well, let's talk about the storyline of The Marriage of Figaro.
Yes.
What happens in the story?
Oh. Well, should I?
Well, don't give away.
Should I give it away? No.
Just tell the basic storyline. Like, how does your character fit into the story?
Dr. Bartolo is, in essence, a rival or dislikes the title character, Mr. Figaro himself. He's not quite sure about this guy. He realizes how slick he is, and he schemes along with his friend and former mistress, Marcellina, to bring him down. Bartolo wants Marcellina to marry Figaro. So he's all about that. He's all about getting back at Figaro for the things he imagines he has done and things that he has done. So that's where my character fits in with the mighty Figaro.
Yeah. Well, what about your character, April? You said it was a minor character, but I'll bet she plays a
musical
role.
But she has an aria that this young lady sings heavenly.
Thank you.
Just wonderful to hear her sing that beautiful little song. It's gorgeous.
Yeah. So it's Susanna and Figaro's wedding day, and the Count is trying to engage in some what would you call it?
Frivolity, let's say, with the opposite sex.
Correct. And so, yeah, so the that's part of the conflict. The Countess comes on in Act Two and is upset that her life has changed, that the Count no longer seems to value her like he used to. So that's part of the conflict. Mm-hmm. Bartolo and Marcellina come on and are part of the conflict. Another part is Cherubino is a young page, so he's he works for the Count, and he's, we call him like Cherubino boy crazy. I don't know, he just, he sings this wonderful aria. I think about love all the time. I can't control. I see this woman and I see this woman and I see this, and I just which I think a lot of people can relate to as you grow up. So my character Barbarina is wanting to marry Cherubino. That's the gist of it. But I, in this production, I'm playing someone who has, the original person who played it was 12 years old. And so in this production, because I do not look like a 12-year-old, and it, in the theme of what the director was going for, he wanted me to kind of have grown up overnight. So I am using my womanly wiles to make the Count do what I want and make him give me Cherubino as a husband. And so, yeah, that's what my character, that's the point of my character.
Yeah.
Yeah. My father, Antonio, does a lot of things to sabotage that. And
he's the gardener.
He's the gardener.
Oh.
Yeah. So there are lots of storylines, but it is all very clear, and you'll have the super titles. which is funny, in our theater, they're called the Figaro super titles. That's
oh,
the
wow.
Figaro sound, the system, that they're right in front of your seat, so you'll understand in English what's going on. And as performers, we try to emote and try to communicate, even when we're talking in singing in the language that's not what the audience knows as their first language. So people will pick up on what's going on really easily.
That would be Italian in this
case. Yeah, that's right.
I'm assuming.
Yeah, but actually, you know, this whole thing comes from Beaumarchais, who wrote this wonderful play about power. And the right of the droit du seigneur, the idea that this man could have, this count could have anyone that he wanted at any time that he wanted, in you know, any woman that he wanted, and he had the power to do that. And it's really a clever way of talking about power and equality, all in this mixed up little villa or castle in Spain.
Yeah,
it's an amazing story. It's funny, yet it has serious intent as well.
Oh yeah, that shows up in a lot of operas.
That's true.
I think.
That's quite true.
Be it the comedies, which this would fall into the comedy category, the tragedies as well have that ending.
That's quite true.
We're speaking with April Martin and Arthur Woodley. They are both in the Lyric Opera production of The Marriage of Figaro. It's the 59th season for the Lyric Opera. Performances open this Saturday, November 5th at 7:30 p.m. And three other performances follow at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. The number to call if you want to get a head start on this is 816-471-7344. And there is a out-of-town 800 number. You can also call 1-800-OPERA-KC, and that would be 673-7252. If you're outside of the immediate Kansas City area, and it's kcopera.org, and you can make arrangements online for that as well. Speaking with April and Arthur, the costumes for operas are always fabulous. I'm sure that this is no different.
This production, the costumes are fantastic. You know, I hate to say it, but we all look good. it's fantastic. They're beautiful. They're really well made, beautiful. The colors, the textures. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about April?
Yeah, they're very ornate. It's fun to be in a corset. We have bum rolls.
I wouldn't think that would be.
Well, you get used to it, and it's fun to feel like you're in a different world. When you put on the costume, you do feel drawn back, because we don't wear them, that kind of stuff anymore. That is really enjoyable. This is a totally new production. The concept, the sketches for the design of the set and the costumes, the lights, all brand new, and it has Kansas City. Our name is everywhere because they built every piece of set, every prop, and all the costumes were built here in Kansas City. So in the costumes, our names. So my last name Martin will be the A Martin will be in the first, and then this production will go to Opera Philadelphia and San Diego Opera and Palm Beach Opera. Those are the three that it's set to go to. So whoever plays Barbarina, her name will go there next, and then her name. Often in opera, you rent costumes and sets from other companies. So we did Traviata here a few years ago, and we brought it from Chicago, so it had all these great names, the Violetta, all the people who've sung in that costume. And there's just something really cool about putting on a costume that someone else has sung in, but it's also neat to be the first in your costume. So Arthur is the first in his costume. I'm the first in mine.
That's great.
So the A Martin will always belong to you.
That's right.
And you'd be quite proud of that. The grin on her face, folks, is lighting up the room. She's so proud of that. She'll be the first one in that costume.
Yeah.
Arthur has sung all over the world. Have you done this particular one anywhere
this
before?
This role I've done before, yes. The last time I did it was last year, in fact, in Seattle. And in a strange, it's really strange, but that was the third time I had done Bartolo for Seattle Opera. The first time was 1997, then we did it again in 2007, and then last year as well. Mm-hmm. So I did three productions for Seattle.
Well, you must love it to want to do it over and over.
I do. It's a great aria. It's a great character. You know, he's funny, yet he's strict, and he's a bit pompous and thinks he's the great orator or the great schemer. So I love characters. I do. I absolutely love doing those things.
Yeah.
And especially when you're in a fantastic group of people and you all get together and make this thing. It's almost like a Judy Garland and Mickey Rooney film. Hey, let's do an opera.
Yeah, well, Mom has some old sheets.
That's right.
It was a lot easier for them.
Yes, that's quite true.
You said that April said that the sets and the costumes are all Kansas City. Mm-hmm. Who does the sets for the lyric?
Keith Brumley is our resident. He's not like us. He's been doing this for a long time, and he supervised. They bring in painters and contractors. So Leslie Travers is from England, and he came. He did the sketches and the designs for the costumes, the wigs and makeup. And then we had fittings with him back during Hansel and Gretel. So that was weeks ago. He came in, and things were starting to be built. And he said, this doesn't look good. This looks good. He just has that eye. And he's worked with our director, Stephen Lawless. He's kind of the right-hand man. Leslie, come look at this. What do you think of the way this set piece is turned? Is that the right angle? Should this door be open? Should the chandelier be flown in? They've made a lot of these decisions already, but as we're going through tech and getting into the rehearsal process on stage with all the different elements, they have been in conjunction to make sure that it all reads to the audience in the best way possible.
You know, a few months ago when the ballet was here, the artistic director brought along the lighting person.
Wow.
And I was amazed how intricately all the light maneuvers, the intensity of the light, the positioning of the light on certain costumes and not as much on other costumes, that was all part of his psychology in setting up the lighting.
Mm-hmm. You know,
I was kind of amazed on a certain level that it was that intricate. I knew the stage had to be well lit,
right?
But I didn't know that the personality of the character would affect what kind of gel was on the character
and things like that.
Well, and in this opera, because Act 4 is at night, and a lot of things are hidden, a lot of mistakes are made, some of the comedy comes from the fact that Figaro can't really see who's down there. He thinks he knows who it is, and then the Count thinks he knows who that woman is, and there's some costume changes. It's just the comedy comes from part of the lighting and where people are on stage and whether they can see each other or not.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to see things put together and interesting. And then the final product, you don't have a long rehearsal period. It doesn't sound like you do.
No, not really. I mean, in essence, it's 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, I guess we can say. Is that right, April?
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, we work quickly to put it all together. But, you know, opera is one of those forms where you have everything and everyone working together to make a one, make a performance. So it's great. It's fascinating.
And it helps that you've done the show many times before.
It does. It does. But it's always new. That's a wonderful thing. It's always new. There are always new insights. Stephen Lawless brought up some points about Bartolo that that I didn't think of before, knew before, and that's what I like. I like the newness of it all. It's always something that you perhaps have never thought about, or you know, or say. Sometimes you go into a role and you say, "Oh, I know how this goes," and everything, and then somebody throws something in there, and you go, "Oh, I never thought of that before."
Mm-hmm.
And that's what keeps it alive and interesting. All
and that helps the artistic director put their own personal print on the show as well, especially with it being new, as April talked about, new costumes, new. Have they done anything? Of course, they're not going to change the score, but do they do things with the choreography or the acting that would be different?
Well, the choreography, the wonderful, there's a dance in this piece, and each place that you go, there's a new dance that's put in, and so that's always new. It's wonderful to see how different people put their stamp of the choreographer, how they choreograph the different that same piece, but in a different way. You know, the last time in Seattle it was very Spanish.
Oh.
And this one is so much different, and it's
the
wonderful.
French Revolution. We are standing up against the power,
Count
and the Countess. That's the kind of inspiration for this, the dance in Act 3 that the assistant director and choreographer put into it for us.
Yeah.
Well, and musically, our conductor, Ryan McAdams, has had multiple conversations with us about Tempe, and this is what I want to do here because I think it just needs to go, or I think it needs to have more finesse. So, definitely, director, conductor, everybody puts their own stamp on a production.
Yeah, time is getting closer. Opens this Saturday, November 5th at 7:30. Performances then continue Wednesday the 9th at 7:30, Friday the 11th at 7:30, and closes with a Sunday afternoon matinee on the 13th at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. The number to call for more information, 816-471-7344. The 800 number, if you're outside of the metropolitan area, 1-800-OPERA-KC, and that translates to 673-7252, or on the web, of course, at kcopera.org. Sounds like, I would say, you're almost ready to go right now. Just from listening to you talk.
Well, we're getting close. We're almost there.
Yeah.
We're polishing the jewel, the gem.
Yeah. It's going to be amazing. Very worthwhile.
Sure it will. I want to thank you both for being with us, telling us all about it. Arthur Woodley, he's sung many places. He sings the role of Dr. Bartolo. Sung in many places. I wish I had more time to ask you about your history of doing Porgy and Bess. I'm sure that was exciting as well.
Absolutely. It was a joy.
I'll bet it was. And April Martin, one of the newly appointed resident artists, singing the role of Barbarina. Barbarina in the Lyric Opera production of The Marriage of Figaro, the 59th season of the Lyric Opera. And that kicks off, not the 59th season, that's already kicked off, but this particular show, The Marriage of Figaro, this Saturday, November the 9th at 7:30, kcopera.org. You can find more information there. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us. The Jazz Insider is next. He has some great jazz planned for you. We're going to have jazz from 1 to 3, great KC jazz, and then the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that crossing the road, I'm Michael Hoke, and we'll see you next time.